well, what about this? What about, because that's kind of how they've been conditioned over time. Tell me what the answer is. Okay. Because they're in school, what, 8 hours a day? And that's kind of what they're told to do things right. So it's like, is it a relatively easy activity to understand? Does it have some connection to the game? Is really important. And do they have the opportunity to find different solutions?
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Adaptable Athlete Podcast, powered by Emergence. I'm your host, Coach Hav. Thank you so much for joining me for today's episode. And my guest today is Tom Perry. Tom is a kinesiology program director in the College of Education at the University of Butler and has his PhD from Indiana University. His research interests are centered on the application of kinesiology theory and concepts to practitioner-based settings such as therapy, coaching, and strength and conditioning. His expertise is in skill acquisition, sports psychology, and coaching, and regularly publishes research in these areas. In addition to all of that, Tom is also a coach. He coaches soccer for the Indiana Fire, a youth soccer club in Indiana. And this conversation with Tom was a really, really good one. Usually when I'm putting together my episodes for the podcast, I have to find little clips that I could put at the front of the episode, which you just heard. And it was actually pretty difficult, not because there weren't any with Tom, but there were so many that it was difficult to choose. This conversation, we really dove deep into practice design and how coaches can apply some of these ideas into their practice. What's unique about Tom is he is both on the research side and is actually putting these ideas into practice and has to focus his communication in a very succinct way, as we'll talk about, because he works with youth soccer players. His background is in soccer or football, depending on where you're from, but these ideas apply for anybody who works with athletes today. Before I let you guys get to the episode, I do want to talk about a couple things that we have going on, some time-sensitive things that we have going on at Emergence. The first is that we are doing 50% off the 2023 SMSC all the way up until April 26th. So hopefully by the time you listen to this podcast, you can snag those before they go off sale. And then leading into that, we also wanted to announce the save the date for the 7th annual Sport Movement Skill Conference, which will be going down October 3rd through 5th, 2024. And then lastly, if you enjoyed the conversation that I had with Alex Arama, and if you're a fan of his book or any of his work with transforming basketball, we will be hosting a movement meetup on May 11th. Again, that's a movement meetup on May 11th, and we'll be co-hosting that with the guys at Transforming Basketball, including Alex Sarama himself. If you're unfamiliar with Alex, I'll link to his last episode in the show notes. Definitely want you guys to check that out. Now, without further ado, my conversation with Tom Perry. Tom, it's great to finally connect with you. We've been, following each other on X for a while now, so it's great to finally see you, at least virtually.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have a chat.
Me too. And, you know, looking at your profile, right, you say, I think you have dad, you're a coach, you're a professor, you work with soccer. I mean, I'm interested to know, like, how that affects your form of life, like how maybe being a dad or being a coach and being a professor, like, does that bleed into one another and kind of shape how you are and who you are as a person?
Yeah, for sure. It's like, you know, I think like parenting is a really good kind of good example where you're trying to tell them to do the right thing. And then the more I've learned about kind of like the ecological viewpoint, I'm much more like, okay, let's think about this, right? Like, how can we deal with this in a different way, right? Like, I think there's some definite kind of, collaboration between those areas, and obviously in like coaching, like I try and apply the ideas that I write about, talk about in my academic life, but then I try and kind of like physically do those things in practice as well.
Yeah, which I think is great, because you are, you know, there's sometimes this gap in like what people read and then now how it's applied, and how we were just talking before we recorded. So I think that's great that you are you know, doing what you learn about, and you're actually applying the practice. So like, what my curiosity too, we talked about, you know, you learning about ecological dynamics, just discovering this approach. How did you come across it initially? What was your first foray into it?
Yeah, so like my background, my PhD was actually with John Shea, who was like contextual interference type guy. Like he was one of Richard Schmidt's students, right? Like schema theory. Wow. So everything that we were kind of like looking at was this very modularized view. And I think coaching helped in this because I was doing the things that most other people do, right? Like having kids kind of follow a particular pattern, like master the correct technique of those sorts of things. And it just wasn't transferring to the game. And I was like, there's got to be something else. I think it was related to one of my classes. There was a paper, I think it was in the original Dynamics of Skill Acquisition, where it was like Keith David's, Greg Anson, and somebody else, Charlie Shea maybe, and they kind of talked about like these different models, right? Like in textbooks, dynamic systems started to kind of come out. So, like most people, like you start going down a rabbit hole and end up in a very different place. But I think. Reading things about like the environment being really important, like the context that learning occurs in, that to me was like, yes, that's exactly how I think it should be, which then obviously then changes how now I look at those practice tasks and think, why would I ever do that? That doesn't make any sense, you know?
Yeah, I think we all have those kind of ghosts of the past that, you know, I try to lean into it. You know, it's like part of who I was and in yeah. my journey and part of your journey. Was there just someone, because you were so like brought up with the opposing, you know, information processing side of things. I'm just curious, like what was the hardest part about maybe making the switch, or was there anything that was particularly difficult that you struggled with?
I think there's some things here where the perceived need to explain cognitive psychology ideas from an ecological lens, right? So like myself and like other coaches that I've spoken to, well, what about memory? Like we remember things, right? And it's like, they want like what's an opposite of memory? Like what's memory look like in your model sort of thing? So I think sometimes that becomes a little bit difficult, that people are trying to look at ecological dynamics through a cognitive psychology lens, right? Which it just doesn't fit right like that. Like it's a completely different way to look at human movement behavior. So things like that, like, where it's like having to try like, or people wanting an explanation of these ideas that have stuck around for a long time, and explaining it from an ecological kind of point of view, right? And I think Andrew Wilson had a really good one on somebody's podcast, and he said, I'm not sure that we store memories, but we for sure remember things, right? And he's really pushing this idea of like, it's an action. Remembering is an action. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're kind of filling a filing cabinet with information.
That's really interesting. I like the way that's put. And I think just hearing what you're saying, it's almost like the lens has to be shifted rather than trying to explain something. And that's where I think a lot of the dissonance is, the disagreement of people trying to understand something, but you first have to probably change the lens at which you view something to really try to understand it.
Yeah. I like to use the words like, what if, right? So like, what if technique was determined by the relationship with the environment? Does that make you look at this thing differently? Well, yeah, it does, right? Okay, well, how does it make you look at it differently, right? It's almost, you have to guide people into that idea of just like, okay, like if this, irrelevant of what you believe right now, if we look at it this way, how does that affect your methods? Right? Does that influence in any way what you currently do, and would it make you do something slightly different? I think that's a difficult thought process for a lot of people. particularly in coaching, because it's a career where we're supposed to know what we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a very ego-oriented career. So, like, if I'm a bit unsure, that doesn't look good for me, right? Okay, and what can I be sure of? Well, I can put them in a prescribed passing pattern where they know exactly what they do, A to B to C. It looks relatively organized. It looks relatively successful, but it doesn't really transfer very well. You know what I mean? Like, so I think, like, so posing some of those questions in conversations of, like, what if you, like, what if we look at things in this way? How does that, again, like, how does that influence that relationship between what you believe and what methods you use?
I really like that question. We should all be asking ourselves more questions. The what if question's a big one. And then I saw one of your threads that you did on, it was a really popular thread on Twitter where you kind of went down some rabbit holes. And I think you said something to the effect of, if you're not working towards transfer to the game, then why are we doing it? And that's another, I was like, yeah, I mean, it's simple, but it, like, totally makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I think that's a question in any area. Again, like, if you're in physical therapy, strength and conditioning, sport coaching, those sorts of areas, we want people to be good in competition, if it's sport related, or we want people to be good in real life, right? So how does the design of practice influence the transfer to those areas, right? And again, like, I just logically, not knowing anything about theories of learning, surely a practice environment that is more similar to what they will experience in, again, similar in terms of, like, the chaos, right? Like, of, I have to pick up information, I have to make decisions in the moment, I can't kind of, like, look at coach and say, what do you want me to do here before I do it? I think that's really important to think about, right? Like, of just how I design my practice environment. We were talking the other day in one of my classes about physical therapy. We have a lot of, like, pre-physical therapy students. And I was like, one thing I don't like about physical therapy clinics, they're really sterile.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
You know, like, it's very organized. You lay on the bed and they do stuff to you. And it's like, when you think about it, if I'm kind of helping someone recover from a stroke, maybe they're trying to kind of relearn their gait, what would be great is if someone created a kind of PT clinic that had different surfaces of floor on there, areas that were uneven, areas that were a little bit softer, a little bit harder, right? So now I can experience all these different kind of interactions with the surfaces. That's going to make me a better walker, right? Like, in the long run. Same with sport, right? Like, it's, we tell people to cut, right? I mean, like, change of direction, or what, in agility, right? Like, those sorts of things. In reality, when you actually watch the sport, they don't move like that, right? So again, like, how does that transfer to a movement that doesn't really occur in the game, right? Like, how can we replicate, you know, why do you change direction in a game? To avoid an opponent. So let's play tag instead, right? And I think that's where a lot of people struggle, like, you know, having luminescent equipment, right? Bright orange, bright green equipment, and the hurdles, the ladders, and all those sorts of things. I know Sean's really loves the ladder, right?
He'll be happy we mentioned him today.
Yeah. So it's like, you, we're moving in a very linear process, right? Like we know what's going to happen, right? In those processes. People don't like tag because it's fun. And I think that's a really weird, like, a weird thought process of just like, oh, it's fun. Like, we should be serious when we're doing this. Right? And it's like, no, like, it's fun because it's a competition. Right, I'm trying to beat someone in some way. And again, we can use constraints to create an environment where there is maybe more success for certain individuals, less success for others, to kind of help them explore that kind of landscape we want to look at.
Well, that was such a great response. I'm thinking of which affordance to select, because so many things. And I mean, you touched on two of them with agility and PT clinics that kind of rile me up a little bit, just because I've been through that process, and I work with a lot of return to play athletes. And you know, just going from that environment, because you're so right, like that environment of, you know, the three sets of 10 and of step ups, and just the way it's set up to sport, or even to your point, to life, it's so different. And so it doesn't logically make sense when you look at it with a clear mind of like, how is this actually preparing me for not only sport, but if I'm a regular person, for picking up my grandson, who's going to be squirming around and you know, weights unevenly distributed, crossing the street, you know, or whatever it is that the task that people have to do, going down a curb, right, in different footwear, with different angles, holding something, you know, I could be perturbed at any moment. So it doesn't make sense to me. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, because it needs to be discussed more.
Yeah, I think it's being comfortable with being a bit outside the norm, right? Like, it's like you almost like need some people to say, I'm going to step out here and I'm going to be okay if I'm wrong, right? Like, I'm going to try some things that it might not work, it might work, but someone has to make that step first, right? Someone has to get out there and say, why don't we try these things and let's see what happens. And I think a lot of people, again, particularly in the environments that you mentioned earlier about, like form of life, right? Like, mm-hmm. we have these, Bron from Brenner talked about like these different kind of circles, the micro and macro environments that influence our behavior. I think that's part of it, right? Like, it is such a rigid structure that people struggle to kind of step out of it, because there are consequences if you step out of that. But generally, that's where good things come from, right? It's people doing something a little bit different than what's been done before.
I mean, that's where innovation comes from. And I think that's, we get in the, there's this like, do what's always been done. That's, it's very common, as you know, and I'm sure it's common in football, American football, and soccer, football, whatever we want to call it. Yeah. You know, and that's where I think people just repeat, rinse, and repeat. And just, you know, you said something earlier that I thought about, but like, to think that the ego driven of coaching, to think that you're a coach, know how every single athlete should move in every situation, and it's pretty wild, you know. So you know, I don't really have a question for you, but just more of a comment on that, you know?
Yeah, that's based on this idea that we acquire knowledge.
Right.
Right? Like, so a coach who's experienced has more, right? Like, they've acquired more information, knowledge, whatever you want to call it, that they can then pass on, right? Like, instead of, they're at the top of the pyramid as opposed to the bottom kind of lifting people up, right? Like, hey, I'm going to create an environment where you might discover stuff that I don't know, right? So I think that's, again, that's where that kind of cognitive kind of framework has permeated, though, you know, that kind of belief as a coach. Like, I know loads of stuff, right? That's awesome. Well done, right? Can you now design an activity that's appropriate for the kids that you're working with, so they can make decisions and they can be successful in those environments, right? Like, I coach soccer. Like, I enjoy it. As soon as I don't enjoy it, I won't do it anymore, right? It's like, yeah, I think I can help kids. I earn a little bit of money. It helps my kids who play as well. And the team that I've got right now, we like play very good soccer. Like, these are 8-year-old girls, right? And they are moving the ball across the field, little combinations. And we say all the time, it's just like, there isn't a right answer, right? You need to decide based on what's in front of you, what your options are, right? And if there's not an option there, there's got to be an option somewhere else. So it's really just kind of creating like a principle-based framework for them to work within. I still do it in practice. I said them last week, we had practice last week, and I said, hey, I've thought about this activity. I want to try it, but it might not work, right? Like, and they've kind of been accustomed that they are a bit of a guinea pig for me, right? where I feel comfortable trying an activity that could be absolutely terrible. And there's been some of those, right? Like in probably every coach's life. But what I do, I try and go back then and be like, okay, what I need to do, I need to make that area a little bit bigger, or I need to put a different condition on the game. Let's see, like, I don't give up on it straight away. It's like, okay, how can I maybe tweak it? Because now I've got data in that activity, right? I've seen it actually happen. So now I've got a better understanding. Like, when you write it on a piece of paper, like, it might look great. But until kids are actually moving in that activity, that's going to give me different questions, right? That then I can kind of redesign or tweak that activity to be a bit more appropriate for the people that I'm working with.
I think this is a thread we should pull on, because I think this is where some people probably struggle a little bit. You're talking very practical, like coaching. What if I design something and it sucks, if it's a dud? And, you know, you kind of addressed, I guess, well, we didn't necessarily directly address it, but you address, you don't abandon it right away. Are there situations mm-hmm. where you would abandon something? What could that be like? Is there any examples maybe you can give? Or another way we could take this, what to do to manipulate a constraint to maybe open up more affordances for the athlete, or to make it a more effective game or activity?
Yeah, in soccer, I try and avoid purely technical drills, right? The club asks us usually to do dribbling against cones, dribbling against mannequins, right, where they learn the technique and then they can magically apply it in a game situation. My argument is those kind of games, like 1v1, whether it's basketball, soccer, whatever sport, you're still learning how to dribble, right? You're still learning dribbling technique. It's just more functional technique than dribbling against the cone, because again, someone's trying to get the ball off me. So one that I've done before, I did this the other day, and then another coach that I'm kind of talking to and pulling him this way a little bit. So we doing like a 1v1, but the defender's kind of stood 3 yards in front of the person with the ball. Okay, there's two small goals behind them, either corner. The idea is for the dribbler to kind of move that defender to kind of dribble through one of the cones. Okay, so the defender is constrained. They cannot tackle, but so they have to move their feet, right? Because they have to slide their feet and just block their path so they can't get into these goals. And I usually put like a time limit on it as well. So it's like that adds a bit more pressure for them to do something as opposed to be moving really slow. What I've done with that activity, because some kids are just a bit more athletic, right? Okay. So I have them put their hands behind their back, because now I can't use my arms to kind of balance my center of mass. So it's kind of constraining the defender to give the attacker an advantage, like in that sense. Do loads of variations of 1v1, 2v2, 2v1. I always try and start certain things in different ways, right? So where the attacker is, where the attacker starts, and most of my things are it's a rectangle, like a rectangle of cones. Where does the attacker start? Where does the defender start? Where does the ball come from? What's the goal, right? What do I want them to do in this? One thing I see quite often, coaches will set up a game where there's four goals and you can score in any goal, right? Okay, that could be useful, but I'm not sure what the intention is, right? Because the defender's going to block where you're going. So I do like the opportunity to go to everything, but I think we need to focus on what the intention of the activity is before we just kind of pull something off the internet that we saw a professional team do.
Which is what a lot of people do is they'll rip something off and they don't necessarily know the why. So I really like that, with this idea of starting with an intention. Now, with your athletes that you're working with, attention is something that can be very limited, mm-hmm. right? How do you navigate that of staying with an activity, because I think some coaches, and I used to do this, I'd have a plan, and then I'd be like, okay, I got to get to 1, 2, 3, and 4. And in the past, 1 and 2 might be awesome and they're loving it. And I'm like, oh no, we got to move to 3. Like sometimes it's cool to stay in 2 and just maybe really let them develop in that game versus going to 3 and 4. But also, how do you manage keeping them engaged?
Yeah. So like the keep instruction to a minimum.
Yeah.
Right. I think Mark O'Sullivan has a really good statement. He was on, I think it was like Sven's basketball podcast. And he said the first feedback should come from the game. Right. Like, so again, you can think of that as instruction as well. Right. So the, your athlete should get information from their performance in the activity first before you kind of step in and do that. So like because I have 10 kids that only we play 7v7, right? So I try and create activities where I'm using 10 kids, if that's possible, right? Like I could split them into, could be 1v1s, but I split them into 2 teams of 5 and it's a competition, right? So defender tackles and they score a goal because there's got to be a consequence to losing the ball. That's worth 1 point. So I'll use scoring as a tool. If the attacking players, attacking team, if they score in a particular way, I will incentivize that. So that those goals are worth 3, right? Whereas any other goal is worth 1, right? Okay, so they, I'm kind of saying you can still look over here, but it's not as rich as this space over here. So I think like if you create activities that are relatively easy to understand, and I have kids on my team, they're on a 3-question limit because they could ask questions forever, right? Like we never start an activity because, well, what about this? What about, because that's kind of how they've been conditioned, right? Over time, tell me what the answer is. Okay. Because they're in school, 8 hours a day. And that's kind of what they're told to do things right. So it's like, is it a relatively easy activity to understand? Does it have some connection to the game? Is really important. And do they have the opportunity to find different solutions, like different ways to solve that problem? Like not a right answer. So we'll do like usually a 3 or 4 minute rotation. So you attack for 4 minutes, your team, you get a score. We scored 17 goals, right? Then we flip. So then the other team has to try and beat that, right? Like they have to score more goals. In that process, as they're switching over, if I've seen something, I might talk about that very briefly, right? But yeah, I really try and keep that short if possible. Because, again, I understand their organismic constraints of not being able to listen for that long, you know? So again, like design for me is much more powerful than me talking.
Yeah. Allow the game, the activity to speak, you know, and it's not just limited to kids though. Like as far as shorter instruction, I tend to talk less, but I've been coached and I've probably done it myself of where I'm in a situation where I'm learning and I'm like, what did that person just say? Cause I'm checked out. But so many people want to, you know, wax poetically about what to do. And it's just, we don't work like that. Even adults don't have, I think, at least for me, I speaking for myself, don't have the capacity to just rinse and repeat. Like I check out at some point.
Yeah. It's like in reality, you want people, your players to make decisions. Right. And that how do they make those decisions? They make those decisions based on their action capabilities and the affordances that they have picked up from the environment. Well, why does coaching have to be that explicit then? Right. Like if the things that you want them to do, make decisions based on what's going on in the environment, create opportunities for them to make decisions based on the information that's going on in the environment. Which in most sports, it's competitive. So there is somebody, again, like there's nothing wrong with 4v1, right? Like really skewed positively to the offensive team. But that might be appropriate for the level that you're working with, right? Like if I'm working on passing, I can work on passing technique, the action on its own, but you never do that action without picking up information from the environment in the game. Like, can I scale that information? Of course I can, right? Like, I can change the dimensions of the field. I can change how many defenders there are. When we work with the really little ones, we might do like a 4v1, but the defender can only walk. They can't run, right? Because past the one kid and they're just on top of them straight away. We want them to be able to pass, right? So I can constrain the defender to make it a little bit easier for that. One team's doing it really well. Okay, now you can run, but you got to run with your hands behind your back, right? Like, so looking at things this way increases your creativity as opposed to kind of constrains it. That makes sense.
No, yeah, it does, and it makes you, at least for me, a more attentive coach, and it's very enjoyable. You know, you said something that I also wanted to talk with you about you know, how instructions can be constraints, and you know how language is important, and I feel like you'd probably have a very unique understanding of that, being, you know, in applied and both academic. Like, besides maybe people talking too much, what are some other errors that coaches make, or things that maybe they can try to be more observant of when they are talking with their athletes?
Hey, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back to our show. This podcast is brought to you by Emergence. Emergence is a movement skill education company that was created to bring greater clarity and applicability to the ideas that form an ecological dynamics framework. As more and more people start adopting a modern approach to skill acquisition, one of the problems can not only be the understanding of these topics, but also their application. This is where Emergence comes in. Emergence was founded to give sport coaches and practitioners the tools and knowledge to unlock your athlete's movement potential and help deepen your understanding of sport movement. With courses that range from the more theoretical based to more practical based, Emergence has something for everyone. As someone who's taken many Emergence courses prior to ever being a part of the company, I can't overstate the tremendous impact that those courses have had on my career. Courses like Reconceptualizing the Warm-Up, Underpinnings, and the Movement Academy have helped me become much more knowledgeable, but more importantly, a much better coach. If you want to learn more about Emergence and truly expand your knowledge of sport movement, then check out the Emergence website to see their different offerings. If you're new to this approach and maybe just want to dip your toes in the water, then I suggest the Practitioner's Bundle, which is a nice entry into some of these ideas. The Emergence website is emergentmovement.com. That's EmergentMVMT.com. Again, that's EmergentMVMT.com. I will also link to all of this in the show notes. Now, back to our show.
Yeah, the Franz Bosch has a really good thing. He's like, your body doesn't care what your coach says, right? Like, your body's going to move in a way based on the constraints that it's working under. So, again, like, if we're looking at kind of traditional idea, I always think of, like, the three-part sequence. There's instruction, there's practice, there's feedback, and then we repeat that process. Why does instruction always have to be verbal? Right? You mean, like, set up an activity and, again, tell them how the activity works, but don't tell them the solutions, right? And again, like, I try and write some papers for, there's an organization called United Soccer Coaches, used to be the NSCAA. It's where the MLS draft is held. So I did a presentation there, and I wrote, they have a soccer journal, which is really like a magazine, but that's where coaches are, right? Like, coaches are not reading academic papers. So how can I bring some of these ideas to where the coaches are? And so I did one on there talking about kind of like principles of play, right? Like these foundational pieces of the game, and how can we coach through principles, right? Like, you don't want to design an activity where you say, you must pass here, right? Because then the defenders know you're predictable, right? Mm-hmm. Which when you're attacking, you need to be unpredictable. Defending, you want to try and make the other team predictable, right? Like, so like in the, it's this kind of back and forth between those two phases of the game. But again, like we don't need to give solutions in our instructions, right? This is what you're looking to do. This is the goal of the activity. This is your intention. This is how it's scored. Let's go, right? And I think some of it too is like a lot of coaches, because in reality, your activities are tied to you as a person, right? I sat down, I spent some time, I drew this little plan out of what I want to do. If it doesn't work, I suck, right? So I want it to work. And what that tends to do, it tends to force coaches into more of a structured, organized pattern as opposed to the chaos. And for me, I particularly like the chaos because it allows me to then step in and help either through instruction or through a tweak of the activity in some way that shows them that doesn't really work. And where they're learning that from the game as opposed to learning that from me.
Yeah, and it provides you with the excellent feedback of how you might structure your practices in the future. And one thing that's interesting, you know, with the idea of principles of play, I think maybe people who don't understand this approach think that, oh, we're just playing. There's no quote unquote system. It's like, no, it's just a flexible system. It's not a rigid system. Yeah. Because, you know, what if you have a system or strategy? What happens when that doesn't work? What are your players going to do? And right. That is what, like, having some flexibility allow them to search for new solutions and look at information, I think is way better.
Yeah. Yeah, in soccer, there's a big push for like game models. This is what particular positions do, right, in our game model. There's one really important piece missing from that. It's what your opponents are going to do, right? Like, so we're missing this really fundamental relationship in the game. So like my kids are 8 years old, right? Okay, short attention span. Played this weekend. I sent an email to the parents last night and just said, that's probably the best U9 soccer that you're going to see ever in your life. Because they didn't follow a plan. They just did what was available. And they had the other team kind of just chasing shadows kind of around the field. Again, like, they're not superstars going to be professional soccer players. They're 8 years old. But they've kind of picked up on some of the things that I've been trying to kind of get across to them, which again is principle based. Like, if you have space, you should keep dribbling towards goal until someone gets in your way. And when that space disappears, that's when we're looking to pass into different space, right? We've attracted the defender. So we have these like little phrases of like, when we've got space, we dribble. When we don't have space, we look to pass, right? Well, that works in any situation. I don't have to talk about in this part of the field or kind of what's happening here. We want to have the ball more than they do, right? So we've got to take care of it when we play, right? That's really important. The space is bad when we're defending. It's good when we're attacking, right? Again, like, it works all the time, right? Like the one I've used more recently is I'll ask them questions like, what's the goal of the game? Like, what are we trying to do, right? Like, what's our intention? Like, the goal of the game is to score and to stop them from scoring. Dead easy, right? Like, you've got to be doing one of those things when you're playing. Our intention, though, what I've really pushed with my players is our intention is to move the opponents. Right. So we're going to pass the ball in a way that's going to, we're trying to break their system. Right. Like at young ages, it doesn't happen as much. They run around like a beehive.
Yeah.
Right. Like it makes it a bit easier to kind of pass around them. But a well organized team, they'll stay in like a bank of players. What we're trying to do is create gaps that then we can exploit. Right. Like we look at principles of play. We're looking to penetrate. Right. We're looking to get closer to their goal so we can score. So using those kind of principles of like that intention, the intention is I'm passing here because that will move the defender. So now I'm automatically attuned to information in my environment. Because if I know where my opponents are, I also know where the space is. And that is also a shared affordance, because then other people on my team see where those space, like, if we're not where the opponents are, we're probably in space, right? So it's like trying to kind of create environments like that, where we talk about these principles, where the decision making is kind of more on the athletes than it is. So again, and I do, like, you know, I do talk, I do give kind of instructions. They're learning, they're still very, very young, right? But like, if we've had some, we practice in a very big facility. So teams are coming in, kind of warming up while you're playing. And there was a team the other day, I think they were maybe U17 girls. And I was stood on the sideline and they were just like, what age are these kids? Right? Because they were impressed in how they were playing, right? But when you give them the opportunity to make decisions, they can surprise you sometimes, right? Like, and they can really show you that they know what to do.
And what's great about that too is it keeps, you know, affordance is open to them rather than, you know, closing one down because you said that it was supposed to be that way, which is what you want to have your athletes. You want them to be able to have options when they're playing and not just have one technical thing that they're supposed to do. So that's what I love about that. And I think you also create, I love the idea too, and across all development time phases, but also youth athletes, is creating this idea of like anti-fragility and being able to adapt their play to any opponent. And I think that really is a great way and an important way to start. Like, most of these kids, I'm assuming, haven't been playing that long. So it's a great way to start their athletic career.
Yeah. Yeah. What we're kind of fighting against is this idea that you need these fundamentals before you move on. Right. And again, it's like again, there's all the people on Twitter that have been pushing things that I like, right? Where it's you've got to put the decision making in their hands, right? The Alfie Cohn, I think, is a education person on Twitter, and he says people don't learn to make decisions by following instructions, right? So yeah, you know, like, ask questions. Like, I've said this to coaches when I've worked with some coaches sometimes. Someone will try something, it doesn't work, and we're straight in there as a coach. You should have done this. You don't know that, right? Like my action capabilities are very different to someone else's. My daughter this weekend decided to dribble forward and shoot from the halfway line, right? And I was just like, why would you? You had so much space, you could have dribbled further. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. I was like, I don't shoot from there, right? And my action capabilities are probably a bit better than yours. So again, it's just, that's why I like those principles, because you had space and you didn't continue dribbling, right? Whereas if you kind of stick to those very basic mantras, it tends to work out in your favor. Like Alex Sarama does a really good one that I kind of stole, applied, like, from basketball, but applying it to soccer, where he talks about this idea of like dominoes, right? Like, we don't have like an offense, we have a conceptual offense. The conceptual offense is we're going to move the ball to break down their system to create a good opportunity to try and score, right? Soccer's it's the same game. They're both invasion games, right? So, like, get kids to focus on those things. Like, decision making is a fundamental skill, not passing with a certain part of your foot, right? I think sometimes we look at fundamentals meaning just actions, and we're forgetting a really big P. Like, I can be a great, like, I can shoot a soccer ball great. If I'm never in the right, in like a place where I can shoot, that action is useless. Right. So we've got to kind of encourage them, like you said, to be adaptable, right? Like, if they're cutting off one option, that means that another option is available, right? How can we kind of manipulate them to create those chances?
And what's great about that is you learn from a sport other than your own, which I think is great. You know, referencing Alex, who was just on that'll be released in a few weeks. But to really learn from another sport, I think is when you truly can understand concepts. Are there any other things outside of soccer that you have brought in maybe to create your form of life as a coach? Any other fields, maybe even outside of the arena of sports?
Yeah, like some of the Bronfenbrenner work that was like 1950s or something, and just recognizing that there's all these different kind of layers that influencing how they're like, we're lucky we live in quite an affluent area, right? Like the school systems are great. Kids have also, you know, like some kids, like that I coach, that age group, they have a better phone than I do, right? You know, like, so they come in Range Rovers and Teslas, right? You know, like, so we practice in a facility that has 3 full-size turf fields inside, right? Like, it's insane, right? But recognizing that that's the influences on these kids, right? You mean, like, if we give them everything and then we say, why don't they want it? Well, they don't want it because you created this environment where they don't need anything, right? Like, you've given them everything, which is, parents do want to do that, right? You want to give your kid the best leg up that you can. But again, I think sometimes that works negatively as well, right? Like we have some game principles in my coaching that are really life skills, right? Like, I expect you to work hard. That is a non-negotiable, right? Like, you should be extremely tired when you come off the field, okay? When practice is over, they clean up, right? Like, I guess I have to remind them sometimes, but it's just like, get the pennies go in the bag, cones go on the strap, balls go in the bag, make sure we've got X number that we're supposed to have. Like, those, like, and maybe that's like the parenting side, right? It's like, I want my kids to not like expect other people to kind of clean up after you, right? Not expect people to do things for you. Like, and again, I grew up in a very working class area, so it is a bit difficult sometimes because I'd have to do things to stay safe, right? Like, I used to get the train into town and then get a bus to school. It was a long journey. And we used to run across the road because some people had got mugged in the tunnel under the road, right? Like, we don't have to deal with that where we live now. So it's like making sure that you're not kind of using your own experiences and placing them on the kids, because again, like, their circles that surround them are really different, right, to what we kind of grew up with. I actually had a good conversation with a coach the other day. There was a group of coaches kind of together, and they were talking about like how kids don't play anymore, right? Like, they don't play outside. When we used to play, we'd go to a field, we'd do this, we'd be out in the street, like, or, you know, this idea of like street ball type stuff, you know, like, just play, really, what we're doing. And I must have smirked or something, right? Like, and then like, oh, what? And I said, last year, my girls played soccer. They had a game or practice in 7 out of 9 days. Why would they ever go outside with a soccer ball? Right? Like, we're doing it. We're creating an environment where soccer is what I do in that location with that person with this equipment. We dropped over the winter to 2 days a week. We had like a break kind of period. And we played more soccer in the basement, in the street, than we've ever played before. Right? Just for fun, like just messing around, like throwing the ball in different ways, trying to kick it in different ways. But it was because it wasn't a job, right? And my kids are 8 and 10. Like, that to me is problematic, right? Like, for the youth sports system that we have.
Yeah. I had to write that down. You know, why would the kids, you're right, why would they play when all they do, or play more soccer when all they do is do that for, at this point, I mean, Arizona, where it's sunny all the time, literally every month out of the year. Why would they want to do? And then we want to throw more at them. And, you know, we wonder why there's no diversity in how kids are playing sports. And it's just so different from, well, I've told the story before, but one of my favorite memories is with my dad. We'd get a bag with a football, a baseball, a bat, a soccer ball, a basketball. We would literally cycle through sports. He didn't realize it at the time. But that was like an amazing thing for my development, because I had to go from different tasks to different sports to different tasks, all within a few hours span. And it didn't cost anything. It was one of the best things that I learned. And it made me actually have a good ability to pick up sports fairly easily. So I feel like there was some transfer in learning how to learn, because, you know, and he wasn't necessarily telling me, because I don't think he knew, you know, that's how to do it. And so we just kind of figured it out.
Yeah. You learn how your body moves, right? And then you're like, oh, I could use it in this way. And it's like, it's almost like opening the doors, right? Like, you can move in this way. You can do it in different ways. Again, that's an important experience for kids to have. Like, that, I always say, like, I go in, I'm at the field too much, like, I'm 3-4 days a week. And the older team is associated with like a professional club in the area, right? Okay. So, it's very serious, it's very organized, you know, like, they have loads of nice stuff. And the other day, I said to another coach, I was just like, have you ever looked at the older girls that come in that play in like the ECNL kind of level? They just look miserable, right? Like, they don't look like they enjoy this. I was like, that's terrible, right? Like I want you to, whether we're high level athletes or not, like, there's got to be some level of like, I actually want to be here. I think we see that a little bit too much in not only professional sports or these kind of youth elite levels that we have kids kind of playing in, college sports as well. It's like, I should want to come to practice, right? Like, I enjoy coming here as a coach. So I want to make that experience the same for you as a player as well. And when you're just like, oh, like, I'm just exhausted mentally, physically with this stuff, I think we're doing things a little bit incorrectly.
And another point that you made previously is about how, you know, you want your players to still be like disciplined, and you still want them to work hard. I think at least the perception that I get, that a lot of people assume, oh, you're just playing games and it's all fun, in the sense of, you know, you're not working hard, right? Games aren't hard work. And that's couldn't be further from the truth. You can still be, I had Casey Kreider on a couple times, but one of the things he said to me was, you know, we want intensity, right? You can't pout and be intense. So it's like, he's not out there and just playing, you know, tiddlywinks and hopscotch. They're working hard in a representative environment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I've done like tag games before, right? Like, kind of like as a warm up, right? Like, figure out how to move. Like, again, where's the ball? I need to get away from the ball, because that's how I get tagged, right? So again, you're getting some change of direction, agility, some decision making, all that kind of stuff. And I had a coach come up to me and was just like, why do you do this stuff? I wasn't in a very good mood. And I said, why do you have them run through ladders? Right? Yeah, and he's like, I think that's a bigger question than you seeing my players like avoid opponents, which is what we're trying to do in the game. You know, like, you're having them run, I call it like holding handbags. If you watch people run through ladders, they like hold their hands kind of up in front of them, like they're holding their handbag as they're running. It's like, you just don't run like that, right? Like, you run using your arms. So, like, I don't know. Like, I think it goes back to like the ego kind of question before, right? Like, I'm trying to do a little bit better, particularly like online. It's like being judgmental, right, of people. And it's like, I see the world this way, therefore everything else is wrong, right? In that sense. So it's like, yeah, could things be better? Yeah, it could be, right? But I think there's a lot of coaches that are traditional in nature, that it's organized, it does this. Hey, I've coached at this level, I've been successful, and all those sorts of things. And so, like, they see themselves as the authority, when in reality, you can learn from anybody, right? Like, you can, like, what, like, I do when my daughter plays, like, I'll watch things that other teams are doing. And I'm just like, oh, like, I wonder how I could use that for my, like, is that something I could use for my team? What could I tweak it in a particular way? Like, and those sorts of things. Like, you should always be taking in information and ideas. But I also think it's much more beneficial to take those ideas from the level that you're working with. Like, too many times we look at the professionals that they post online, right? They post on YouTube. Look, England soccer team, like, they're doing a passing pattern. So yeah, like, they're at camp for 2 weeks and they train 2 times a day for 3 hours, right? Like, you can't go at it all the time. And again, they're at a very different level. For me, like, kids come to practice to play, right? Like, I come to soccer practice to play soccer. Like, I don't come to soccer practice to run laps, to dribble against an inanimate object. Like, I come to hang out with my friends. I come to enjoy myself. I come to work hard, right? Like, I think it's, we've taken it too seriously in some respects, because we believe in this, like, path dependency, early specialization type model, when, again, if we interacted with the literature a little bit better, we'd see that those things are actually really, really negatively impacting a lot of kids.
And I mean, the information's out there too, even with the early sports specialization. I just was reading an article the other day, and one of the main points in the abstract was people that specialized early, they did a review of NCAA athletes, had more injuries, they took longer to recover from their injuries. I mean, it's, if you don't even believe in maybe what we're saying, at least believe in that, at least understand that you know, sports should be fun, and they, athletes at a young age should be playing multiple sports. But
yeah,
you know, it's so difficult with the system that we've created to go against that. So it's a rather uphill battle. But I do, you know, you mentioned, you know, kids doing games versus, you know, just doing ladders. So the thing I don't understand is, like, why would you want someone looking down at their feet the whole time? Isn't that kind of defeat the purpose of perception and actually having your eyes up, which every coach says in the world, but yet you're doing ladder drills? I don't get it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. Like, I use some ones in my class that I've pulled offline. There was one, I think it was Arizona State, that were, it was American football, and they were pushing, like, fences on wheels at the quarterback. I was like, there's literally 4 guys stood right there that you, like, you don't have to tackle him, but, like, wave your hands in the air or something, right? Like, and present different situations to him, right? Like, that's how you're going to get good, right? Because again, you're in a sport where this person is trying to stop you doing what you want to do. So again, like, let's just do those things in practice. Again, it doesn't have to be full contact. I think that's, like, another misconception, right? Like, it's, when you do games, it's like, it's 100%. Right. It's like, no, again, like, you can constrain those games in all sorts of different ways for different people. Right. Like, you might put different conditions on a game because you're working on a particular intention, or you're working on a particular goal with that particular group.
And that's, you know, I thought of when Sean would say, like, ownership speed, about, you know, your athletes don't need to be going 100%, right? Go at ownership speed. Sometimes easier to make decisions. It's more, also the value of slowing down and of changing pace is really important. And I think, like, we always talk about speed kills. Well, a lot of the best athletes can slow down and are able to, you know, perceive more information that way. So I think that's like a really good point that you made.
There was a really good quote by when, like, Messi moved to Inter Miami, right? And they went and talked to some of the academy players, and the interviewer's like, "Oh, like, what? like, what's like the best thing that he's said to you that's like kind of helped your game? And one kid said, he told me to walk more. Right? And it was like, why would he say that? He said, because when you walk, you see more things. What he's really talking about there is we perceive to act, we act to perceive. Right? Like, if I stand still, I only see what I see from that position. But if I'm constantly moving, some affordances decay and some affordances emerge, right? And maybe those affordances are a little bit better than the ones that that were there before. So it's things like that where it's just like, just keep moving around, keep adjusting your position a little bit, and like recognize the different things that you see. Like, now that's an option, right? It's almost like we're not as important as we think we are as coaches, right? Like, we should take a lot of credit when players take ownership, when they make decisions, right? They make mistakes, but then do something about it, right? Like, that to me is really valuable as a coach. Like, yeah, do I like my team to win? 100%. Do I like them to play well? 100%. Right? Like, I'm still competitive. It's not all unicorns and rainbows, right, in there. For me, it's important for them to be good soccer players than me showing that I was, right? Like, look how good I am. Look how much I know, right? Like, it's, you drop the ego a little bit and just, you know, like, hey, what do you guys want to do? Like, my kids have started to come to practice and say, hey, can we do the activity that we did the other day? Right? So I'm like, okay, I said, that wasn't in my plan today. I said, but if you really like that and you thought it was helpful, then I'll plug it in like on one of the different days, right? Like, why can't they ask for like things that we want to do, right? Like, it's their team, right? Like, I'm just a dude who shows up a couple of times a week and on the weekend to help you enjoy yourself, like in that sense.
That was a mic drop moment with not showing them your skills, right? You want them to be skillful. I love that. I'm curious with your, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, your coaching and you also have a company where you do some consulting, Kestrel. What is the meaning of the name? Can you tell me a little bit more about why you picked that?
Yeah, so it's funny because there was a movie in England when I was growing up called Kez, and it was about a boy who had a pet kestrel, right? So I was like, oh, that's kind of funny, and I found like a cool kind of symbol, right, that was on there. And then I actually started to research the name, and I think I have that on my Twitter profile. It's the kestrel is capable, right? Like, it's like not the biggest, strongest bird, whatever it is, but it's really capable in kind of what it can do, right? And it, like, from a psychological perspective, I just like that idea, right? Like, that it's, I'm not motivating you. I'm not making you more confident. I'm showing you that you have the capability to do all these great things, right? Like, at your level, the maximum of what you can give, how can we fulfill your potential of that? Like, you don't, like you said before, like, you don't have to be the biggest, fastest, strongest all the time. Does that help? Yes, those are action capacities, right? My youngest daughter, super skinny, right? Like, I mean, like, very slight frame. She played a position she'd never played before this weekend, and the coach was like, you played amazing, like, in every game. Like, so she's like really pumped. She kind of built that confidence, and she ran around like a crazy person in that game. But what I've noticed is she struggles to kind of change direction and do some things because of balance or strength, right? So she, I think it's called like valgus, when you squat and the knees come in, yeah? So she does that, right? So like, we've started to do something, hey, like a few times a week, let's go down to the basement. We've got some kind of fitness equipment down there. And let's have you do a couple of exercises, like some single leg balance type things, some lunges on like an AirX pad, some squats, but like kind of squeezing a ball, or pushing a band, right? Like, so she gets used to those feelings. Because again, like, she's a very, for an 8 year old, like, she's a very clever soccer player. She sees things that other kids don't see. But these capacities are probably holding her back a little bit, right? So it's okay, well, if I improve those, she's already got some of the things that I don't think other kids are going to be able to get. I think there's, it's important, right? Like, you know, when you play against fast people or strong people, it's harder work, mm-hmm. right? Like, but you've got to be able to find different solutions to that. I had, when I played like back home, I wasn't very fast, right? My coach used to call me deceptively slow, right? Okay. So, what I recognized very, very early, like as a 10-year-old, I knew offside better than anybody, right? I knew how to play. I knew how to kind of manipulate the attacker to get him to try and run in behind so I could kind of step up. But that was because I wasn't fast. Like, why would I race somebody who's just considerably faster than me? Like, why would I play that game? Why not play this game over here? And I think that's where, particularly in America, I find a little bit, it's a bit like bigger, faster, stronger, right? We're always looking for the bigger, faster, stronger kids. Well, if I can't, in soccer, for example, if I can't get close enough to you to use my physicality, you've just eliminated my physicality. I can't run up to you and just rugby tackle you in the middle of a game, right? Like, the ball's got to be there, right? So, like, it's encouraging them, like, we draw the defender close, but then we play it to somebody else because now that's opened up space in an area that we want to get to, right? Like, so, you know, like, we fight fire with fire a lot. And at some point, some team's going to have a bigger fire than you, right? Whereas if you fight fire with water, you'll always kind of eliminate their strengths and you'll always maximize your own strengths.
And you know, we were talking about your daughter, this, and we mentioned Alex Sarama earlier, but he's big on these ideas of rate limiters. And sometimes a rate limiter is, you know, what are your effectivities? Like, are you strong, fast, and then developing? And that's why it's so important for athletes to face a live movement problems, because as they grow and change, those can change, and then they can become and develop new solutions and adjust and not just rely on what they used to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I see it a lot, like in soccer, where you have kids that, like, the team I have, like, the first team, right? Like the top team in this young age group, which again is, that's another conversation of that kind of stuff. And my daughter's on the second team, right? My daughter's born in late November. I have kids on my team that are born in January, February. Like, it's like 9 months, right? Like a 9 month difference in age, right? So they're almost a year older than she is, but she was born on the wrong end of the year, right? Someone said this, I thought it was really funny, bit of a segue. It was just like, the best thing you can do for your, like, if you're a sports parent, the best thing you can do for your kid is give them a January birthday. Right? Like,
yeah.
Because they're going to be more mature than everybody else. And that's what a lot of people seem to kind of look for. Because I've coached at the oldest age group, like in U17, 18, U19, at the top end of our club, like at the ECNL level. And now I'm coaching these young kids down here. I'm much more acutely aware that if we don't teach them how to think, they're going to have problems later on, right? Like, the goal is for these kids that we have right now at 6, 7, 8 years old to still be playing 18, 19 years old, right? At whatever level it is. But when we just look at kids that are bigger or faster because of maturation, and they're nowhere near passing through puberty yet, we're really doing a disservice because we're missing a lot of really good kids. You know what I mean? Like the coach said to me the other day, he was just like, oh yeah, like, I think she'll turn out all right. I was like, why? He's like, oh, because her sister's really good. Like, sister doesn't play in her body. No. Do you know what I mean? Like, you got to look at people in different places. My eldest daughter is on the top team in the club. she has a January 4th birthday, right? Like, so she's born in a perfect place for kind of what we want for soccer. But again, it's like I really push her to think, right? You can't just be big, right? Because at some point, those differences are going to be eliminated at some point in your career. So if you can think now as a 8, 9, 10-year-old, guess what? Like, you're going to stay around for longer than if you're just athletic, right? And again, not devaluing athleticism, still very important. But again, like, we've got to make sure that we're developing the perception action cycle as opposed to just the action kind of piece.
It can't be the only thing. And unfortunately, it's what we focus on probably a bit too much. And you see that with combines and timed drills, and that people make judgments off of someone's abilities. But these are two completely different tasks, but yet we equate them to being the same task. So where can people learn more about your business and just what you're doing? Obviously, X is probably a good place, but is there anything you want to point them to, whether it's some of the journals or anything like that, that we can even put on the show notes?
Yeah, if people are interested in like soccer related stuff, I have a couple in this soccer journal, and they can reach out to me via email. That's fine. You can use my Butler University email, and I sent some last week to people. So you know, like there's those ones. I've written Phil O'Callaghan, mm-hmm. who's Mr. Tennis Coach. So we're writing a paper right now. I'm trying to finish the revisions to send that in. So I've done a paper in a tennis journal, the International Tennis Federation journal. So again, like, it's really, I'm trying to meet people where they are, as opposed to saying you need to read this stuff. It's like, I'm going to write some things that it'll hopefully stimulate your thought process. Twitter, I write my thoughts down every so often. Like, I'll post nothing for a while, and then something will kind of formulate in my head. I've like the threads have been pretty successful. I've got the one that I wrote a while back is pinned mm-hmm. at the top, which is basically talking about coaching and look at it from like an ecological dynamics. That's like 250,000 views or something, that one, like, has, you know. So it's like, I try and put those things out because I know that's where some coaches are, right? Like, we need, as kind of academics, I think we need to do a better job of interacting with practitioners and vice versa. Like, I think practitioners need to interact with academia a little bit more. Like, we're not scary. We're not trying to take over. Like, I don't want your job, right? Like, I'm happy to help you to even if it's just to chat about something. Like, oh, I've been doing this. I've been struggling with this. Happy to have those conversations with people. And like my email, I don't know if you said it earlier, it's T and then my last name, Parry, at butler.edu. Again, happy to interact with anyone through that email.
We'll definitely put that in the show notes. And I appreciate what you're doing and appreciate you coming on. And I do, just this question popped in my head. So I mean, Butler, I'm sure you're aware, is a basketball school. Or, you know, what are your thoughts on basketball? Are you a fan of much of basketball?
Yeah, so like, I went to Indiana University.
Oh, that's, which is, you're in a basketball state?
Yeah. Bobby Knight is he has pros and cons, yeah, right? Like, to his legacy. But yeah, so like, I just find any sport interesting, right? Like, it's the idea of being skilled and seeing how people solve problems in so many different ways, often counter to what they've been taught, right? Which I think is always an interesting thing to look at. But yeah, we're trying to actually, Alex Sarama and I, we're trying to write a paper together with Keith Davids for basketball. So looking at kind of like constraints-led approach, ecological dynamics. So then we can point basketball coaches to that paper. And then we've also discussed, I want to do it here at Butler as what I call the Science of Sport Summit. So I'm trying to meet with people to try and do maybe an annual, biannual kind of event, but we focus on one sport. So obviously being at Butler, we'll focus on basketball first. And I'd like to bring people like Alex in and some, we have some professional teams in the area that they have trainers, you know, strength and conditioning people. So it's just like, hey, like this year is going to be about basketball, right? Like let's get some good speakers in. Let's have some good kind of practical examples of things. And then maybe in 2 years time, it's soccer. And then in 2 years time, it's track and field or whatever it is. But just trying to bridge that gap a little bit where we invite coaches into this kind of academic area, but talk in their language. Right? Like, this is why you would use this information. This is why this data might be important for you, or this knowledge, this approach might change how you look at things.
Well, that's very exciting. We might all have to get our tickets, book our tickets now to Indianapolis. That's super exciting and looking forward to learning more about that. So, but again, it's been a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate you coming on, Tom, and I'll link to everything in the show notes and appreciate what you're doing for the community.
Sounds great. Thanks, Javi.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you liked today's episode, share it on social media, or better yet, write us a review on the platform of your choice. To stay up to date with the podcast, check out the podcast website, theadaptableathlete.com. To see what we have going on over at Emergence, check out the Emergence website. That is Emergent Movement, MVMT. Again, that's Emergent, MVMT.com. Thanks again for joining me. Until next time, we'll see you on the Adaptable Athlete Podcast.